Dana Curtis. I play Deanna Troi in Star Trek The Next Generation, and you're listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
Hi, I'm Eugenia Stapiro.
I'm Jerry Donaldson.
And we have with us...
Robin.
And Deanna.
We were actually talking about anime and manga today, and both of these two read and watch quite a bit of both.
A few more reads it.
You read quite a bit on the...
internet, that's about it.
Yeah.
You both read it?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So how did you get involved in manga?
My friends are big fans of it, and so they recommended it, and well, forced me to read it. And then it just kind of grew from there.
And what is it about manga that you enjoy, as opposed to other comics?
Do you read comics?
Yeah. I wouldn't... there's no real difference, because I like the comics too. It's just the same thing, really.
So one's American, one's Japanese. Is there a difference between the two of them, do you think?
Not really. They've both got...
in terms of style?
It's definitely a style and drawing, especially.
Yeah, because if you can definitely tell with the characters, the way that they're drawn, if they're Japanese to American, because of, like, in certain styles, like, they generally can sometimes have bigger heads and a smaller body, and isn't just the eyes... are always different, and the way that they display emotions on the face can sometimes just be like a simple little line.
Japanese have a certain way of drawing that's different than the Americans do.
Is it easier to read?
Except that a lot of the time it's back to front.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
That can trick you at times.
What do you mean back to front?
So it goes from back cover to front cover and right to left.
Yeah, right to left. And then if you go and read a Korean manga, it's swapped again, because when you used to watch reading Japanese manga and you go from a Korean, it's kind of like, oh, I'm not meant to start there, I'm meant to start here.
Is there a difference between Japanese and Korean?
They also have a different style of drawing. Like, you can tell by the way that people draw what country it kind of comes from.
Yeah.
It's basically the same though, but it is just the drawing I desire, like the Japanese compared to Korean, better. Just looks...
the storylines are a lot different as well.
Mm.
In what way?
Well, a lot of mangas from Japan are like magical or supernatural or have some sort of weird element that's not normal.
Or it focuses on Japanese culture a lot.
Yeah.
And then what got you involved in the anime side of things then?
GCV. Because I started off liking Pokemon, and as I got older, taste changed. And just started watching different ones.
Cheese TV was the Saturday morning cartoon.
The weekday morning ones.
Weekday morning cartoons. Yes.
It's been transformed so much now that it's become Cheese TV. It's not the same.
It's rubbish.
Well, that's because you're all grown up more than you were. You weren't 5 or 6 anymore.
Mainly because they're not doing the whole cartoons that what we used to have. Now they're doing more educational.
The quality has gone down.
Bugger, they want to educate children. Isn't that terrible?
It's just
corrupt their minds with cartoons.
Give them Pokemon.
It's what we're used to. It's completely different. Because they've got like this, a science thing, like right just in the middle of it. So they have a cartoon, then a science thing, and another cartoon. But even the cartoons aren't as good.
The quality's gone down quite a bit for children's TV shows, it seems.
Is that because you've grown up, maybe? I mean, we all think that... I think every generation it goes through actually thinks that the previous generations are...
I don't know.
You know.
Everyone seems to say it.
Rubbish. Me, SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh, that's stupid.
That is stupid. Okay. To me. I know Deanna's a big SpongeBob SquarePants. But to me, you know, my cartoons and your cartoons. And when you grow up, you see little kids, the Jetsons, Flintstones.
Yes,
what's wrong with the Thunderbirds?
It's
John 90, Captain Scarlet.
You know, they can't do magical things.
No. Pokemon.
they can't transform and come out of cards.
Yes, they can.
They can't magically poop out of a car to become a dragon.
No, they were more scientific and real.
Yeah.
They were, actually. They were.
But they walked funny.
And you don't?
Burn.
So what are some of the things that you enjoy watching in anime?
The old classics like Pokemon. I like Death Note. Oren, which you've watched.
Yeah, Oren's good because it's a girly one as well. Like, there's, like, two different types of, like, mangas and animes. Because you've got the whole boys one and then the whole girls one.
Is that different from comics, do you think?
I don't know.
Like a traditional American or Western comics, I should say.
A lot of those comics seem to be aimed at guys more than girls, so.
And where, like, in Japan there's a really big, like,
everyone in Japan reads manga.
Shoujo? Oh, no. There's, like, a special genre that's basically for girls that involves love and a romantic comedy.
So it's aimed at manga. It's aimed at everyone.
It's not just
things. Unlike comics seem to be.
And because of, and the mangas, they've gone from a lot more. So they're not just, like, they're not just TV shows, or they're not just cartoons. They've become, not cartoons, comics. They've become, as well, they've become a big giant franchise. You can buy games for it, like ship games, pillows, toys.
The Hello Kitty kind of thing.
It's crazy. If it's a popular thing, you can buy even the outfits for the TV shows, like in Vampire Night, the school uniforms. Yeah, you can go and buy them. You get the
cosplays for conventions.
It's a lot bigger than what, you know, I would say in America.
Now, Deanna, you've gone to a few of the Avcons here in Adelaide, and you've dressed up yourself. What is it about dressing up and going to something like that?
It's just fun and a great way to meet people that are interested in what you like as well, because you go to the conventions and someone that sees you in your cosplay and like wants a photo, they, you know, that they enjoy what you obviously enjoy, and you can talk about that, and you've already got something that to talk about. You don't have to sit there awkwardly with no idea what to say. It's a fun day. It's enjoyable.
And who have you dressed up as?
I dressed up as Sarah from Final Fantasy 13, and that's it so far. But
Well, not that it's anime, but you were dressed up in Harry Potter outfit the day I saw you.
Yes. We dressed up as Harry Potter as well.
So has that encouraged other people to dress up in other types of shows, not just anime as well?
Yes. You get movies, you get TV shows, you get games, you get anything that anyone wants to dress up as, you get it. It's quite big.
Years ago, people used to think that people who dressed up in Star Trek uniforms, because I think that was the beginning maybe of cosplay.
Yeah.
Star Trek uniform were weird.
Well, it still is.
You think that's changed?
I think we got that when we dressed up at a school dress up day. Like, people thought it was weird. I think it's just certain people find it really, like, more people are enjoying it these days and don't find it weird. So it's just times are changing.
So do you think it's a way for kids to feel together?
I reckon it is. Because you do group cosplays. You get a certain anime and you get, like, your favourite group out of that, and then you act as the characters, you do skits, and you really feel like a group when you're dressed up together. So, yeah.
So you feel as if you're part of a larger thing as opposed to being outside on your own. So it's a good thing to encourage people. It's a bonding
thing.
Yeah.
And if you had a chance to dress up as any character that you would like to dress up as, what would you choose?
Right now is Roy Mustang from Fullmetal Alchemist. That is the cosplay I want to do the most.
Why?
Fullmetal Alchemist would probably be my favourite anime ever, and Roy Mustang is my favourite character ever, so I would love to be able to do his cosplay.
Just this aside, was that the guy that was there?
Yeah.
At the last time we did?
You've got his signature. Yeah.
Have we got a signature?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, there you go.
Yeah, you've seen him.
As you can tell, Jerry and I are not au fait with the whole anime world. We certainly know about it, and it's growing more and more that you can't really be involved in the convention scene without knowing a little bit about or seeing anime type characters around the place. Don't know who they are.
No, not a lot of them. I mean, obviously American cartoons such as Futurama and that are seen more readily in Western television. And I think in Australia we can say that we're still influenced by Western television much more than we are with Japanese television.
Though Pokemon was very big here, and Dragon Ball Z
But they were actually sold more as children's TV, cheese TV in the morning.
And the thing is, though, they are generally, when they're bought by American TV shows, are cut and edited in certain ways. Because in the original Sailor Moon series, as it continued to go on, yes, it started off as child, but as it's got on more in the series, like, it involved, there was a lesbian couple, and they did sometimes have scenes.
It ages that as the viewers age.
Yeah, and there were scenes that weren't, you know, appropriate for little kids, and in the American one, they would just cut that out and cut it short, so they'd completely change the whole dynamic of the story as well, because if you are missing out a part. So when I did go and watch some of the Japanese English subtitles, it was completely different.
On YouTube?
Yeah, completely different to what I, you know, have seen.
Yeah.
On TV.
Do you think there's a wide culture with kids now going onto YouTube looking up Japanese TV?
Yeah.
Particularly anime?
Yeah, I would say so. It's become popular because it's easy to access, like, because if we don't have no normal TV, you have to kind of go out there and look for it.
And it's really expensive to buy.
Mm-hmm.
So the only option is to go online to watch it because you can't buy it easy. And if it's an out there anime, it's rare that you can actually find it to buy.
So, Robbie, you mentioned Sailor Moon.
Mm-hmm.
So that was your first exposure to anime, really?
That would have been my first, and it would have been my favourite. And then as I kind of grew up, I kind of drifted away from it. Because I wasn't a big Pokemon or Dragon Ball Z fan, because they are a lot more aimed at boys. Some girls did get into them, as Deanna did.
Oh, Pokemon was sort
but
of...
It was kind of a thing, but it's still more directed at boys, because the main character was still a boy.
Yeah.
And they still did, you know, but... Like, to me, it was Sailor Moon, and then I just stopped watching it. And then again, like, a couple of years later, I think when I was 10 or 11, Jamie, my brother, was, like, you know, on anime or manga sites. There was a manga. So, like, I'm just reading mangas, and I was reading, like, Bleach. Was it Bleach? Bleach.
Bleach.
Yeah. Bleach and Naruto. And then I just saw that, and I saw, like, and I just went into the thing, and I kind of looked under my own category and saw more things that I like. So it did start off with Sailor Moon. But as I grew up, I kind of got sick of it, and then I kind of got reintroduced back into it.
So is Powderpuff Girls a Japanese one, or is it a Korean one?
I'm not entirely sure.
I think it may be Korean, because the anime
is very different.
It's different, and they grow up. They adapted it, so they also become teenagers as well, which is kind of really weird. And with the Japanese, they generally don't jump.
Not as quickly as
they
did. Do you think the Japanese do deal with women's issues a little bit better as far as making females the main leading?
Powderpuff Girls is American.
Oh, is it really?
Yes.
Well, there you go.
There you go. And maybe it's an American attempt at
trying to do Japanese style.
Yeah.
Did it go too well?
well, it was still
1998 to 2005, so it was actually on for 7 years.
It was popular, and they've made a spin-off series for it.
It went down quickly, though.
Because they became teenagers. So
I like the monkey in it.
Mojo.
So do you think that the Japanese animation do deal with having females as heroes a bit more than normal cartoons do?
Yes. There are a lot more female roles in anime or manga in Japan.
The main ones that are directed at girls, like, it's always the girl who...
The girl superhero.
Yeah, a girl, or even just a plain girl who does soccer or martial arts, and they're the main focus, and they tend to always be, like, brave and courageous and kind of stick up for people. So they generally, you know...
Yeah.
They have some sort of superhero persona in them.
They were less the damsel in distress and more the knight in shining armour.
Is that what attracts you to anime and manga?
Yeah, but then...
Sometimes.
It depends on what you kind of manga you like. Because there's, like, quirky ones that are really weird, but people generally like them. Like, there is one which Deanna's probably read, which is about gender... Oh, what's it called? Gender swap or something? There's, like, a gender one where it's basically you have, like, males dressed up as females, and there's even an anime about, like... These three boys that look like princesses. Like,
so it's transvestite.
Yeah, they've got transvestite things. So they've actually got a wide range of things which people generally do like. It's not just, like, you know, the females being a main hero. It's just a lot of things.
Yeah. It gives, like, the underdog, the person, chance to shine.
And you think that Japanese do that a lot better than American or Western?
Yeah. A lot better. Because of the cartoons that are from American are basically aimed at boys. It's mainly for them. Like, there's a few, you know, girly ones. But then, like, as you grow up, they kind of don't, you can't continue to follow along with them as you can when you're a boy. It's just a lot easier.
Yeah. When you're watching anime, do you prefer to read the subtitles or would you prefer to have the voiceover ones with the English voiceovers?
It depends if it's done professionally, because if it's done professionally, I'll watch it. But if not, I'd rather prefer watching the subtitles to hear the Japanese voices, because of just the Japanese voices, I believe, add a bit more to the character, because that's who they are, like, that's the original character and that's the original voice of the character. So, and it's just better that way. But the fan dub ones tend to be really bad.
the reason we're laughing is because there were a few other bits said before that one, so that I've edited out.
But yeah, they're really bad because they don't really know what they're doing and they don't know how to properly put the voices in. They sometimes cut out the background noise.
And are these amateurs?
Yeah, basically, fan dub ones are amateurs, which they don't know what they're doing. And the only way you can really watch one in English is if it's properly done by a company that has been bought by America. But then again, you miss out on certain aspects that are in the original Japanese series.
I must admit, I watched Vampire Knight on YouTube, the first the first episode. It was cut into three, but the first two were professionally done and done with Mella Lee being the voice of Yugi, who we've got as an interviewer at the end of this particular podcast. And then the last part was done by a group of fans sitting down translating it as it was going along, and that was really bad. I think you missed out on the whole experience by having that happening.
See, also, it depends on the anime, because if you're watching a series that has like 50 episodes, you don't want to be sitting there reading it the whole time, because with Fullmetal Alchemist, I can watch a couple of episodes subbed, but eventually, you want to be able to concentrate on the video as well. So after 50 episodes, it's good to be able to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the dubbed bit comes into.
Mm.
And a lot of the lesser-known animes, you can't get dubbed. You can only get the sub ones because America hasn't thought it's been big enough to get it translated.
But even in the video shops, so I've gone into, say, JB Hi-Fi, the DVDs, it's very hard to get dubbed versions. All of them have got the subtitles, the English subtitles, but they're still Japanese.
Yeah, that's where it gets annoying.
And yet that still hasn't put you off from watching the shows?
Nope. In a sense, though, even reading them, like, for me, I've had trouble reading when I was little. And the fact that if I wanted to read them, I had to read faster. So it actually has, like, you know, given me a bit more than just reading it. And you actually do tend to learn words as well.
Yeah.
You can learn what words are and what they mean, because sometimes just in the corner of the screen, if there's a specific word that's not really known in Australia or in anywhere in the Western civilization, they have a little, like, key tab thing saying this is what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually do learn a bit about the show through subtitles as well.
The problem is when it's incorrectly translated.
Yeah, that's the only problem, like, because of... There's so many people that, especially with anime series, where people, because of, they basically have to get volunteers to, translate the, writing sometimes, and sometimes people aren't that good.
Even the companies get it wrong at times.
Yeah, and so it's just, it can be easily screwed up, but you kind of just have to go with it and just accept it.
It still tends to mean the same.
Mm.
There's just times when it's absolutely hilarious to see how it got translated.
Something I've noticed with the anime shows is they have quite long, involved introduction titles, you know, singing video clips almost. I think Vampire Knight has about a minute and a half of the song before it even starts. Is that something that you enjoy listening to, or would you prefer that it be shorter?
Well, it depends how long, again, the anime is, because after 50 episodes, you don't want to be watching the same thing over and over every time. But I like it at times, because it's usually a good song, and it's just
a good way to start the episode instead of having clips from the TV shows as tends to be in, like, live-action TV shows.
Hmm.
And the fact that the songs are generally also sung by proper Japanese musicians as well. So you actually, like, if you like the song, you can even branch out into their music and get into that because of you have, like, you hear it and you're just like, oh, yeah, that sounds cool. And so you go off and you kind of look them up and you learn a bit more. So manga is kind of just like a gateway into kind of Japanese culture.
Yeah.
You can learn more about it, and it's just, like, basically giving more of us Western children the chance to experience something different.
And with the lyrics, you get to sing along, so
yeah,
that's always fun.
So going to Japan and being involved in a cosplay would be something you'd like to do?
Yes, I would love to. Or even just go to an American convention, because they get really into that cosplay over there. But just somewhere where it's... Because Supernova has some, like, you've got quite a few people that go all out for it, but nothing like Japan and America.
Mm.
It is just absolutely crazy over there.
There's, like, people who just dress up in their cosplay outfits and go and meet up with people just on normal everyday events in Japan. They don't have to do it for a special... Here as well. Like, they don't have to do it for a special occasion. They can just, like, say, yeah, we're going to do this today. And they'll just all dress up and...
Even now there's people that go out and they do photo shoots just in town and spend the day out in cosplay. They have cosplay walks, like the zombie walk. And, yeah.
So is that here in Adelaide they do
that? I think we have a zombie walk, but in Brisbane I know they have a cosplay one as well. And I've seen photos on DeviantArt and it just looks really, really good. And if you're just starting out in cosplay, it's a good way to meet someone who's really good at it and to get them to help you to learn how to do it properly. So it's just, yeah.
You have to invest your time in cosplay.
You do.
And money.
It is a lot of effort and it can be a lot of money.
So is that as far as making your own costumes or...
Yep.
Is that something that a true cosplayer would do, would be to start making their own costumes?
All the cosplay competitions, or nearly all of them, the rules will say that at least 70% or even higher of your cosplay must be your own work. If you're a true cosplayer, you will make your own costume instead of buying it.
Mm, but it's just, sometimes it's easier to buy it than make it because you don't have the same resources to kind of make something as good as what some other people can.
If you're only doing it for fun, then, and if you can't, sorry, then buy it. But if you want to do it as, like, a hobby and to go into the competitions, you need to be able to sew and make it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly going to conventions, well, something like Armageddon and Supernova, where there is a lot, and AvCon, where there is a lot more anime characters or anime presence, I love looking at the costumes.
Even if you don't know the anime, it's just really good to be able to just look. That's so good.
Brilliant. It is brilliant.
And they're always bright as well. So they definitely, like, cosplay, they just stand out because you see people they don't have the traditional hair colour as well. They go, like, all different colours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when you see someone dressed up, it's magnificent in the way that, because of they can be someone completely different. They can dress up a way which wouldn't normally be accepted in, like, a normal society, just, like, occasions.
Yeah.
And it's just the way that it is. It's, like, a bright, big, like, thing that's fantastic that you get to see.
And there's nothing better than getting a photo with your favourite anime character.
It's like Disneyland.
Tuxedo mask.
Well, that's true. It is. It's like being in Disneyland and seeing all your favourite characters running around and you've got people dressed up as those, and you do. You run to them. You have to have your photo taken with them.
Especially if it's a really, really good one.
Mm.
So that's where the fun comes into it, even if you're not dressed up.
That's true. Well, that might be it for now.
Well, that was really interesting, having a different perspective of slightly younger people. Slightly, just slightly.
What do you mean slightly? You gave birth to one of them.
I was just trying to convince people it was slightly younger. All right, I gave birth. When I was young, a different perspective on what they think of anime and manga.
It's good to know that they have found something that really interests them and that they do get enjoyment from, and it's fun.
It's also really interesting to see that the female characters in particular in Japanese literature, and we call anime and manga literature, is more relevant to younger women than American cartoons or American style animation, where they like the strong character, they enjoy the fact that they can see someone they can probably emulate with. Emulate? No, that's not the right word. Or emulate too, as opposed to the American superhero type stuff where it's mostly male based.
We have an interview too with Melody, and we met her at
Armageddon
last year now, really.
In October? October 2010. Yeah, not gone.
And she's the voice of Yugi, who's the main character in Vampire Knight.
Yes. So sit back, enjoy, and find out what she thinks of Vampire Knight.
It's really lovely. I enjoy the people I work with and the job in anime, but I wasn't prepared for the worldwide emails that we get and just how many people you reach in English.
Well, I have a couple of children, and they have certain things that come online where they read them online every week. So it's an amazing, I suppose, increase in people actually wanting to look at comics and anime and manga. It is a resurgence, I think, back from the 50s.
One of the questions I hear a lot is, why do you think Vampire Knight, which is one of my recent series, has been so popular? Obviously, vampires are popular right now, but Vampire Knight's lore that you've created doesn't really address a good and bad. You feel like these are different beings, humans and vampires, that are sharing the same world. And they are they're beings with very real needs, and they're trying to meet them the best they can, not necessarily meaning to harm the other. And I think that socio-politically and economically, we have such a conglomerate of this world existence, where we're having to sit and live and go to school and sometimes marry people that are from very different cultural backgrounds and value sets, and it's not a question of who wins or loses. It's not good or evil. What do we do now to exist together? And I think teenagers and the young people that are really going towards Vampire Knight, Yuki Cross, doesn't know, who she is. But she loves both sides, and it turns out that because of that, she loves herself. And there are, characters on both of my love choices. One is not so great on humans, the other not so great on vampires. And each of them realizes they're hating something inside of themselves.
So is this something you enjoyed, the understory of it all, rather than
really
just
did.
The voices, being part of it?
Relating to the fans and why the stories mean so much to them. And I think because the Japanese way of storytelling is very much about having character, but having choices, not always good ones. And what choice do you make? And even if you have good intentions, seeing that there can be bad outcomes and vice versa. And so there's no judgment. It's just watching what happens when you have these three choices. And I think in a Western culture, there's such a condemnation. Like, if you make a mistake, it's all over. That's sort of in our religious upbringing, that it's wonderful to not feel like every decision could be your last or the end. Or I think we make so many mistakes, not just as teenagers, but as adults. And the animation, the graphic novel, and the comics, even our heroes, we see are flawed, and that they're wonderful with great powers and can change the world, but when they come home, they're still having difficulties with their children or their marriages. And I think people relate to that.
So do you end up discussing this with someone? Because obviously you've thought about it a lot, and what's behind the story and what the meaning of the story is. Is there someone that you sort of chat about what it is, or do you just do it with fans, or how do you explore the whole?
When you're actually in a series, you're not thinking about it. It's very quickly done, especially in anime. The stories are existence. I do my best not to actually read the stories or know much of everything about them when I'm voicing them in English, although it's there. The director will tell you in that moment. I find that's better for me. But with some of the series, you don't realize how popular they are until you come to a convention or someone writes you. And they're people that are not quite who you expect. My mother loved science fiction, but it's a way of people processing the relationships that are in existence. And right now it's across the internet or across the world. And so I didn't think much about it, but when you sit and you talk with the fans, or you wonder why, people say this is a phenomenon at this moment. Why do you think it is? What makes Vampire Nights, say, different than other vampire novels? And I think it's because there's no good guys and bad guys. And I think that's a little bit more of how people relate. So I haven't thought about it as much, but obviously when we come here, we get to talk about it and be introspective. And I end up playing very similar characters.
Yeah.
In anime, I'm usually the private school girl by day and superhero at night. And I think we start to see those things in ourselves. And not that I'm a superhero at night, but I went to private school and trying to figure things out, you know, just like every girl does, finding out who the right love is and what your meaning is. These are all themes I think everyone can relate to.
Mm-hmm. And I think teenagers in particular now, because they're exposed to so many things, are doing that a lot more than maybe kids that are in the 40s and 50s.
Absolutely.
Who knew the role, what they were going to do and what they were going to be.
I think there weren't so many choices, to be quite honest, back in the 40s and 50s. And I think it's a double-edged sword. And you can be anything you want to be, but then I think it's almost as if you're at a restaurant with a 57-page menu. By the time you get to the end, you can't remember what you really wanted to do in the beginning.
Yes, I do think
that young people today have a lot more things to think about what they can be, what they can't be. You know, money is obviously worldwide kind of a difficult thing to deal with. I think it was a little bit more prosperous a few years ago.
So for you, did you have a direction in life that you had a dream and you followed it and this is where it's ended at this point of time, or was this just something completely different than what you'd ever thought you'd be doing?
I never thought I'd be a voiceover artist. I couldn't dream it. There's things you don't dream of. No kid watches cartoons and thinks, I can do that. I mean, a few maybe. It's one of those jobs that you don't think is possible. I always loved singing. And thought I'd be a singer, and when I finished university, I went and did disaster relief work for a minute, just kind of wanted to find myself and find value outside of the arts. And I came back to Los Angeles, my mother was ill, and I took a voiceover class. And I think in the back, because people had always said, you have a lovely voice, you should do voiceover. And I took this class, and I did get discovered, and I had an agent and booked a commercial right away, and the next thing I knew, I was doing animation, and I've just been very lucky, and ended up falling into a career that allows me to continue pursuing music and writing, and I never thought that I would be this lucky, and it really is very dreamy. Some people ask, well, is it as great as we think it might be, and honestly, yes.
So what did you study? You studied the arts at university?
I did, theater and communications.
So you wanted to be an actress or direct? Or
I wanted to direct, actually. And but once I got to, I was very lucky to work with some wonderful directors before I got to college. So when I got to college, I don't want to say I was a bit bored, but I wasn't as interested. I think that a lot of my family are lawyers and in politics, and I began thinking about where I can make the most difference. And I'm so surprised. My parents now that are on board with my career, they're very, very supportive now. But I didn't know what a difference even animation and voice work do. And sometimes we'll be working with hospitals or children that are at-risk youth, and how important it is to them that somebody that they've read or watched on television comes and works with them, and the self-esteem they get because you write them an email. I think it doesn't really matter if you are a big, huge movie star or you're a teacher, a librarian. I think we're heroes to somebody. A friend of mine, Kim Anthony, has a great saying. She said, to the world you may be just one person, but to one person you may just be the world. And I think that's what we're all looking for.
So are you a geek girl yourself?
Do I watch lots of anime? No, but I was the geek. I was the girl at not the center table. I moved a lot. My parents were in the military.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always the new girl with the accent who didn't really know how everything went. And I think it was very, you feel like such a foreigner. And surprisingly enough, most of the outcasts or the people on the edge of the scene, we're all now in the voiceover world. And it's funny that we are finally it's almost like getting to live high school the way you just dreamed it always would be. We're all good friends. We get to travel around the world together and make cartoons. And people think we're cool.
Yeah.
Wow. That's justice. But no, pretty popular people are great too. nothing against them. No, I think that what made us feel so different, being the word when we were in high school, has made us unique and special as adults. And it's given us a strength, you know, an individuality. And it's nice to be relating to our fans, because I see some of them, it's really difficult to not be what everyone expects you to be. But I'm around people now that are up for Oscars and are musicians at the Grammys, and they're not what people expect them to be. That if there's somebody that's going to change the world and discover a cure for cancer or change the education system or the monetary system, it's going to be someone like a Bill Gates, who was probably a little bit different. So I get excited when I come to a Comic-Con or Otakon or an Armageddon, and I see that there is a safe place for young people and adults that feel different. And here they can feel special and unique.
So were you into, as a child, cartoons or comics or any of that kind of stuff? Or are you coming to it late?
I'm definitely coming to it late. I was a bit of a bookworm. I was very good in school. I was ahead in school, several grades. And so I didn't have free time. I never played games. I didn't really get to watch cartoons or animation, just on Saturday mornings. But it was such a lovely luxury for 1 or 2 hours. But most of the time I was studying. And so the irony of being in your 20s and getting to actually watch lots of cartoons.
I did.
And it's a lovely second childhood.
So have you any acting plans? Like, do you plan to go into acting?
I've been asked quite a bit, actually. I think it's probably bound to happen. I'm not a bad actress at all. But I do write music for film and television. I have a band, Magnolia Memoir, that's doing quite well in Los Angeles, and we're being shopped around. And I think that's taken up a lot of my time. I think being on camera is just as much of a gift as being behind the mic. And it would be in this coming year that I would need to do some more training and take it seriously. There are some technical things, just like as a voiceover artist, that I would want to make sure to know before I went on camera. But there have been some offers, and it's very exciting.
Wow.
I like that.
With your band, is there any way that your watchers can get a hold of your music? Or are you online or anything like that? Would you like to plug that here?
Of course. MagnoliaMemoir.com. And you can find us on Facebook under Magnolia Memoir. And you can find me on Facebook, Mella Lee. I'd love to be your friend and stay in touch with people just about everywhere in the world. And we do get requests. And we're finishing our second album. This last couple of weeks, we're just in post. So it'll be ready to go in the spring of 2011. But you can listen to our first album free of charge. It streams on our website. So you can get to know us.
And your style of music is what kind of...?
The first album is very much jazz, kind of early Quincy Jones 50s vibe. The reviews have come back as Billie Holiday meets Tom Waits at 3 a.m. when ties get loosened and the party begins. Our second album that's about to come out feels a little bit more like Fiona Apple meets The Clash. So we're having a bit of a party. I'm in a band full of boys. So the first is I wrote all the music on the first album. I co-wrote with the boys on the second album, so they get to play. We get a little bit more rowdy.
Anything in the future for you? You're still continuing with Vampire Night?
Well, we did actually finish the second season. I'm currently in Drarara. I have a new couple of games we can't talk about yet that are coming out soon. Oh, you have to look up Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. It's done by a lovely animator. It's absolutely adorable, and I watch that almost every morning.
Yeah?
It's one clip, and I want it so badly to be more. I don't usually plug other voiceover artists and directors. Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. I think my dream animation would be to be a part of something cutting edge and new, pushing animation in a new direction. I love Disney, and I think they're very much part of my childhood. But all over the world, as we're traveling, the possibilities in animation and the stories they're able to tell, you know, for all ages. I would love to be involved in something that pushes our art form to the next level.
And talking about the art form, it's actually more difficult, I think, or I come to believe, than sitting in a room full of actors, because you're acting to a microphone.
Yes, we're lucky enough on some jobs to have group acting, Nickelodeon and Fox, everybody's in the room. But on anime, it's just you by yourself. And often for animated films. I recently did a film where it was just me in the room, and 2.5 years go by until you actually see it, which is very common. I think that's where the term voice actor really comes in. I have several friends that are brilliant actors on screen, but they react off the people they're with.
Yep.
So when they go behind a microphone and have to act just with their voice, it comes out not so compelling. But that's where the director really comes in. Because in that room, your translator, your person who's telling you about this magical world that you're voicing, it's your director. So there's an amazing amount of trust. You don't know what the other characters sound like. You sometimes will get sketches, but often you don't even know what they look like. So you're in the room, and you have your headphones on, and there's a director who says, in this next line, this is what's happened. And I love that part of it. It reminds you of being a little girl where someone's telling you that story and you close your eyes and you can see it in your mind and you get to just imagine.
How do you feel when you see someone dressed in your character's costume walking around?
Well, you know, one of the event coordinator here, their daughter was explaining cosplay to somebody, and she says, you know, in school we may not be able to really communicate who we are or what we like. And communication is very difficult when you're grown up, so it's probably really difficult when you're younger. But when you cosplay, the people that love this character or this with you, you instantly have friends. And it's as if you're saying, this is a story, a book, a story, a graphic novel, a manga that touches me, and you instantly have friends because they know, oh, I like that book too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's wonderful to see people that are moved by the story that obviously I'm moved by because I'm doing it. So it's like an instant friend.
So it's quite amazing to be idolized in terms of a character that way, isn't it? I mean,
it is. It's a lot of responsibility too, because they love the story so much. It's just like any other story that ends up going to film, whether it's animated or live action. There's always that pressure to create, you know, capture that magic. And as human beings, I think, how can I compete with a million people's imaginations? Sometimes you do fall short.
Mm-hmm.
But just even signing autographs today, there are some people that ask you to speak in that character, and it's a living, breathing embodiment of something that, a story that's touched them. And a lot of anime stories are about alienation and finding your way and finding your purpose in spite of opposition.
So do you think it's becoming more mainstream that people can actually dress up in the characters they want, as opposed to the freaky, tricky people that everybody used to have a go at 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah, well, think of Star Trek conventions, per se. You can have accountants and everyday people, and if they told you you're going to Star Trek convention now, people go, oh, okay. But 30 years ago, you said, really? I think it's such a huge movement that it can't be that unusual anymore.
And I think manga and anime have added significantly to that.
My first convention, I was actually moved almost to tears. It was a lot of people, all cosplayed and dressed up, and you knew that they were able to express themselves in a way that was very bold but safe. And that this was a place with probably 10,000 people all walking around and not being hurt or judged, but being recognized for their creativity and for their vision. And I thought, wow, you know, when I was in high school, we didn't really have a safe place like this. And it is really safe. And I could instantly see why these conventions are getting bigger and bigger all across the world.
But no, it's been wonderful talking with you today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We do really wish you all the success.
Mm.
And hopefully we'll see you back in Australia.
Oh, I'd love to. I think we will be back in spring.
Mela is a beautiful singer.
and with Alex Burke, who we also had the pleasure to get to know, is part of a group called Magnolia Memoir. You can find out all about them by visiting their website, www.magnoliamemoir.com. We just heard that Mella's group has been signed by a record company and that their second album will be coming out soon. On iTunes, look out for their rendition of Rainbow Connection. It is amazing. Mella has given us permission to play a track off their first album called Magnolia Memoir. It is written by Mella and Alex, and it is called Unexpected Bliss. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Robin and Deanna for being our guest presenters today.
Yes, thank you, girls. It was quite interesting to understand manga from your perspective, particularly Deanna and Robin around late teens. So it really is interesting to see that young people actually look at things with a slightly more critical eye than just watching SpongeBob SquarePants and laughing at him. Ta-ra.
Bye.
Bye. See ya.
Bye. 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 Bye.
Yeah.